Chapter 2. I am born. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. To begin my life with the beginning of my life, I record that I was born, as I have been informed, and believe, on a Friday, at 12 o'clock at night. It was remarked that the clock began to strike, and I began to cry, simultaneously. In consideration of the day and hour of my birth, it was declared by the nurse, and by some sage women in the neighborhood who had taken a lively interest in me several months before there was any possibility of our becoming personally acquainted, first, that I was destined to be unlucky in life, and secondly, that I was privileged to see ghosts and spirits, both these gifts inevitably attaching, as they believed, to all unlucky infants of either gender, born towards the small hours on a Friday night. I need say nothing here, on the first head, because nothing can show better than my history, whether that prediction was verified or falsified by the result. On the second branch of the question, I will only remark that unless I ran through that part of my inheritance, while I was still a baby, I have not come into it yet. But I do not at all complain of having been kept out of this property, and if anybody else should be in the present enjoyment of it, he is heartily welcome to keep it. I was born with a call, which was advertised for sale, in the newspapers, at the low price of 15 guineas. Whether sea-going people were short of money about that time, or were short of faith and preferred cork jackets, I don't know. All I know is, that there was but one solitary bidding, and that was from an attorney connected with the bill-broking business, who offered £2 in cash, and the balance in sherry, but declined to be guaranteed from drowning on any higher bargain. Consequently, the advertisement was withdrawn at a dead loss, for as to sherry, my poor dear mother's own sherry was in the market then, and 10 years afterwards, the call was put up in a raffle down in our part of the country, to 50 members at half a crown a head, the winner to spend 5 shillings. I was present myself, and I remember to have felt quite uncomfortable and confused, at a part of myself being disposed of in that way. The call was won, I recollect, by an old lady with a handbasket, who, very reluctantly, produced from it the stipulated 5 shillings, all in halfpence, and 2d halfpenny short, as it took an immense time, and a great waste of arithmetic, to endeavor without any effect to prove to her. It is a fact which will be long remembered as remarkable down there, that she was never drowned, but died triumphantly in bed, at 92. I have understood that it was, to the last, her proudest boast, that she never had been on the water in her life, except upon a bridge, and that over her tea, to which she was extremely partial, she, to the last, expressed her indignation at the impiety of mariners and others, who had the presumption, to go meandering about the world. It was in vain to represent to her that some conveniences, tea perhaps included, resulted from this objectionable practice. She always returned, with greater emphasis, and with an instinctive knowledge of the strength of her objection, "Let us have no meandering. Apostrophe, not to meander myself. At present, I will go back to my birth. I was born at Blunderstone, in Suffolk, or thereby, as they say in Scotland. I was a posthumous child. My father's eyes had closed upon the light of this world 6 months, when mine opened on it. There is something strange to me, even now, in the reflection, that he never saw me, and something stranger yet in the shadowy remembrance, that I have of my first childish associations with his white gravestone in the churchyard, and of the indefinable compassion I used to feel for it lying out alone there in the dark night, when our little parlor was warm and bright with fire and candle, and the doors of our house were almost cruelly, it seemed to me sometimes, bolted and locked against it. An aunt of my father's, and consequently a great aunt of mine, of whom I shall have more to relate by and by, was the principal magnate of our family. Miss Trotwood, or Miss Betsy, as my poor mother always called her, when she sufficiently overcame her dread of this formidable personage, to mention her at all, which was seldom, had been married to a husband younger than herself, who was very handsome, except in the sense of the homely adage, handsome is, that handsome doses, for he was strongly suspected of having beaten Miss Betsy, and even of having once, on the disputed question of supplies, made some hasty, but determined arrangements to throw her out of a 2-pair-of-stairs window. These evidences of an incompatibility of temper induced Miss Betsy to pay him off, and effect a separation by mutual consent. He went to India with his capital, and there, according to a wild legend in our family, he was once seen riding on an elephant, in company with a baboon, but I think it must have been a babu or a begum. Anyhow, from India tidings of his death reached home, within 10 years. How they affected my aunt, nobody knew, for immediately upon the separation, she took her maiden name again, bought a cottage in a hamlet on the sea coast a long way off, established herself there as a single woman with one servant, and was understood to live secluded, ever afterwards, in an inflexible retirement. My father had once been a favorite of hers, I believe, but she was mortally affronted by his marriage, on the ground that my mother was a wax doll. She had never seen my mother, but she knew her to be not yet 20. My father and Miss Betsy never met again. He was double my mother's age when he married, and of but a delicate constitution. He died a year afterwards, and, as I have said, 6 months before I came into the world. This was the state of matters, on the afternoon of, what I may be excused for calling, that eventful and important Friday. I can make no claim therefore to have known, at that time, how matters stood, or to have any remembrance, founded on the evidence of my own senses, of what follows. My mother was sitting by the fire, but poorly in health, and very low in spirits, looking at it through her tears, and desponding heavily about herself and the fatherless little stranger, who was already welcomed by some grosses of prophetic pins, in a drawer upstairs, to a world not at all excited on the subject of his arrival. My mother, I say, was sitting by the fire, that bright windy March afternoon, very timid and sad, and very doubtful of ever coming alive out of the trial that was before her, when, lifting her eyes as she dried them, to the window opposite, she saw a strange lady coming up the garden. My mother had a sure foreboding at the second glance that it was Miss Betsy. The setting sun was glowing on the strange lady, over the garden fence, and she came walking up to the door with a fell rigidity of figure and composure of countenance that could have belonged to nobody else. When she reached the house, she gave another proof of her identity. My father had often hinted that she seldom conducted herself like any ordinary Christian. And now, instead of ringing the bell, she came and looked in at that identical window, pressing the end of her nose against the glass to that extent that my poor dear mother used to say it became perfectly flat and white in a moment. She gave my mother such a turn that I have always been convinced I am indebted to Miss Betsy for having been born on a Friday. My mother had left her chair in her agitation and gone behind it in the corner. Miss Betsy, looking round the room, slowly and inquiringly, began on the other side, and carried her eyes on, like a Saracen's head in a Dutch clock, until they reached my mother. Then she made a frown and a gesture to my mother, like one who was accustomed to be obeyed, to come and open the door. My mother went. Apostrophe Mrs. David Copperfield, I think, apostrophe said Miss Betsy. The emphasis referring, perhaps, to my mother's morning weeds, and her condition. Yes, apostrophe said my mother, faintly. Miss Trotwood, apostrophe said the visitor. You have heard of her, I dare say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my mother answered she had had that pleasure. and she had a disagreeable consciousness of not appearing to imply that it had been an overpowering pleasure. Now you see her, apostrophe said Miss Betsy. My mother bent her head and begged her to walk in. They went into the parlor my mother had come from, the fire in the best room on the other side of the passage not being lighted, not having been lighted, indeed, since my father's funeral, and when they were both seated, and Miss Betsy said nothing, my mother, after vainly trying to restrain herself, began to cry. Oh tut, tut, tut. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Betsy, in a hurry. Don't do that. Come, come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my mother couldn't help it notwithstanding, so she cried until she had had her cry out. Take off your cap, child, apostrophe said Miss Betsy, and let me see you. Apostrophe, my mother was too much afraid of her to refuse compliance with this odd request, if she had any disposition to do so. Therefore she did as she was told, and did it with such nervous hands, that her hair, which was luxuriant and beautiful, fell all about her face. Why, bless my heart! Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Miss Betsy. You are a very baby. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my mother was, no doubt, unusually youthful in appearance even for her years. She hung her head, as if it were her fault, poor thing, and said, sobbing, that indeed she was afraid she was but a childish widow, and would be but a childish mother if she lived. In a short pause which ensued, she had a fancy that she felt Miss Betsy touch her hair, and that with no ungentle hand. But, looking at her, in her timid hope, she found that lady sitting with the skirt of her dress tucked up, her hands folded on one knee, and her feet upon the fender, frowning at the fire. In the name of heaven, apostrophe said Miss Betsy, suddenly, why rookery? Apostrophe, do you mean the house, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked my mother. Why rookery? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Betsy. Cookery would have been more to the purpose, if you had had any practical ideas of life, either of you. Apostrophe, the name was Mr. Copperfield's choice, apostrophe returned my mother. When he bought the house, he liked to think that there were rooks about it. Apostrophe, the evening wind made such a disturbance just now, among some tall old elm trees at the bottom of the garden, that neither my mother nor Miss Betsy could forbear glancing that way. As the elms bent to one another, like giants who were whispering secrets, and after a few seconds of such repose, fell into a violent flurry, tossing their wild arms about, as if their late confidences were really too wicked for their peace of mind, some weather-beaten ragged old rooks' nests, burdening their higher branches, swung like wrecks upon a stormy sea. Where are the birds? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Miss Betsy. The? Apostrophe, my mother had been thinking of something else. The rooks, what has become of them? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Miss Betsy. There have not been any, since we have lived here, apostrophe said my mother. We thought Mr. Copperfield thought it was quite a large rookery, but the nests were very old ones, and the birds have deserted them a long while. Apostrophe, David Copperfield all over. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Miss Betsy. David Copperfield from head to foot. Calls a house a rookery, when there's not a rook near it, and takes the birds on trust, because he sees the nests. Apostrophe, apostrophe, apostrophe Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe returned my mother, is dead, and if you dare to speak unkindly of him to me, apostrophe, my poor dear mother, I suppose, had some momentary intention of committing an assault and battery upon my aunt, who could easily have settled her with one hand, even if my mother had been in far better training for such an encounter than she was that evening. But it passed with the action of rising from her chair, and she sat down again very meekly, and fainted. When she came to herself, or when Miss Betsy had restored her, whichever it was, she found the latter standing at the window. The twilight was by this time shading down into darkness, and dimly as they saw each other, they could not have done that without the aid of the fire. Well? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Betsy, coming back to her chair, as if she had only been taking a casual look at the prospect. And when do you expect, apostrophe, I am all in a tremble, apostrophe, faltered my mother. I don't know what's the matter. I shall die, I am sure. Apostrophe, no, 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 apostrophe, said Miss Betsy. Have some tea. Apostrophe, oh dear me, do you think it will do me any good? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried my mother in a helpless manner. Of course it will, apostrophe, said Miss Betsy. It's nothing but fancy. What do you call your girl? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know that it will be a girl, yet, ma'am, apostrophe, said my mother innocently. Bless the baby. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Miss Betsy, unconsciously quoting the second sentiment of the pincushion in the drawer upstairs, but applying it to my mother instead of me, I don't mean that. I mean your servant girl. Apostrophe, Peggotty, apostrophe, said my mother. Peggotty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Miss Betsy, with some indignation. Do you mean to say, child, that any human being has gone into a Christian church, and got herself named Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's her surname, apostrophe, said my mother, faintly. Apostrophe, Mr. Copperfield called her by it, because her Christian name was the same as mine. Apostrophe, here. Peggotty. Apostrophe, cried Miss Betsy, opening the parlor door. Tea. Your mistress is a little unwell. Don't dawdle. Apostrophe, having issued this mandate with as much potentiality as if she had been a recognized authority in the house ever since it had been a house, and having looked out to confront the amazed Peggotty coming along the passage with a candle at the sound of a strange voice, Miss Betsy shut the door again, and sat down as before. With her feet on the fender, the skirt of her dress tucked up, and her hands folded on one knee. You were speaking about its being a girl, apostrophe, said Miss Betsy. I have no doubt it will be a girl. I have a presentiment that it must be a girl. Now child, from the moment of the birth of this girl, apostrophe, perhaps boy, apostrophe, my mother took the liberty of putting in. I tell you I have a presentiment that it must be a girl, apostrophe, returned Miss Betsy. Don't contradict. From the moment of this girl's birth, child, I intend to be her friend. I intend to be her Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.